celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
You ready to talk about your pets? Dr. Debbie and Joey Villani here to answer your questions from the free Animal Radio app for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. Judy has booked another humdinger of a show. We're having Dr. John Huber back. He is the clinical forensic psychologist. And I asked him last time what that really meant. Mm-hmm. I still don't get the forensic part.
But you don't get forensics?
Well, I know what forensics means.
But in this case.
Between the word clinical and psychologist, I've never heard that before. So I don't get that part. Do you? It must come easy to you. You're the doctor, of course.
I guess it depends when we're talking about animals and forensics. Like if the animals are where the forensic is used or if it's human clinical forensic.
Okay.
Because that might be different.
Well, he has some news for us today that really doesn't surprise me. He says, a new study says that if we're stressed, our dogs will be stressed or could be stressed. And if we're calm and relaxed, they could be calm and relaxed. That our dogs really tune in to what our feelings are all about.
They mirror us.
I'd have to say, you know, when dogs are walking and you see that nervous pet owner that grabs the leash and pulls it up really tight. You know, yes. it really that you pass that kind of energy through the leash. So I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, not a surprise, but we'll find out the research behind this coming up with Dr. John Huber. Also on the show today, this is very exciting. We've landed the big interview here with attorneys Tristan Wood and Lauren Sierra. They represent Sean Casey, the owner of the alligator that was just evicted in Kansas City, Missouri. Remember, this was a big story a couple of weeks ago. This poor alligator.
Yeah, we talked about it.
And I like the name of their law firm.
Jungle Law. I don't know if they represent all animals, but they're certainly representing this alligator and his guardian. And we'll find out what the deal is with that and where Catfish, I believe he's a 200-pound alligator now, where he is. He apparently lived on a diet of chicken McNuggets or chicken nuggets of some sort, so you can understand.
Oh my goodness!
So big, yeah.
Tastes like chicken.
You've seen a lot of animals at the practice. I'm betting you've never seen an alligator there.
Have you?
You know what? I have not seen an alligator. I can say that. That's not something I'm prepared to see either.
Now we're all in a jovial, good mood, but unfortunately, you came in from not a real great experience just now.
We've just been seeing a rash of dog fight injuries. And, you know, there's different categories of dog fights. You know, you're out walking your dog gets jumped by another dog and attacked. So we've been seeing a lot of those. But what we've also been seeing have been like little spats that household dogs or family members' dogs have had that aren't really rising to a level that really gets people concerned. And that's my problem, because so many of these pets that I've seen lately, they started off with an injury days previously before they even thought to come into the veterinarian. And that's why we're having problems.
Oh.
So, you know, you guys know about like cat bites, you know how it's a small bite, but it introduces bacteria to under the skin. Same things happen in dog bites. And a lot of times we don't see the extent of the injury and the pet doesn't really show it. But if you ignore that original spat and think, everything looks fine, no big deal, 3 days down the road, we could already have a massive infection causing tissue damage. And several of the pets we've seen have needed multiple surgeries because there's been so much damage to the skin. We've had to actually go back and remove dead tissue because we couldn't save it. It had already been damaged so badly from the infection. Mm. So I guess my gripe and my lecture for, you know, pet owners out there is really, you know, make sure you see the veterinarian. If you don't think it's a serious thing, great. You may not need antibiotics, but a lot of times we need to clip the area, really evaluate and give you a better idea of what your risks are and what we need to do for your pet.
Is this only when the animals draw blood?
It punctures, but there's also shaking injuries. So we see this in little dogs that get picked up by big dogs, and you may not see bleeding at all, but it causes separation of the tissue layers. And that creates an open, what we call a virtual space.
Oh, wow.
And that's a site where we'll have fluid buildup. We can get infection to settle in. And there can already be damage to the blood flow to the skin that, you know,
if we don't address that, you know, it does its damage, and then we have to deal with a much more extensive surgery down the road. So
I've never heard of that. I never even thought about
that. Well, now, should I even let my animals play with each other? Or...
Oh, come on now. I'm not telling you don't let them play. But there are, you know, there are certainly, I think most pet owners, we know when our pets have played and played friendly-like. And then there's the time when you hear that audible difference. There's a difference when pets are playing and everyone's getting along fine. And then there's the correction, you know, the bite correction. Or you just witness that your animals are, you know, having it out. But that's where I'm saying, you know, those are the situations where we would want to see a veterinarian for those cases.
That was like me and my brother when I was growing up. We were fighting all the time. I would end up at the vet. Not at the vet, the doctor, but sometimes the vet because it was cheaper.
You're so bad.
Hi, Dr. Debbie. How are you?
Oh, hi. I'm wonderful today. What can we help you with today?
Well, my husband and I adopted a cat that's an indoor-outdoor cat about 4 years ago, and mm-hmm. he's always worn a collar, even when we adopted him. And we've noticed within the last 6 to 8 months that he's been coming in the mornings without his collar on. And so the first time we thought, well, you know, maybe that's a coincidence. The second time we got a little suspicious and thought, well, maybe one of the neighbors is concerned about him wearing a collar that has to buckle. And so they're removing it. Then the third time that we put a collar on, we used the breakaway collar. And he came in last week without his breakaway collar on. And so we're concerned that, well, we'd like to have for him to have a collar on with a bell so that we can hear him when he comes in and out of the house. And we think that that's a good idea for him to maybe, you know, so maybe the birds and the animals can hear it and he can, you know, the birds will get away from him. So we're just wondering, what should we do about this?
Well, it's kind of a tricky situation because, you know, and I've had some cats in my lifetime that have been able to get out of breakaway collars in an indoor situation. So that's what they're designed for. I can't explain why the other collars came off, but I'd be concerned. We do like to have ID on our pets, especially if they're going outside. But if your kitty is getting into environments where that is coming off or getting snagged up on things, that does put him at risk for, you know, choking or some kind of injury from that. So as much as we want to keep a collar on them, you know, if we assume that no human is removing that.
Do you think neighbors are removing it, though? You are assuming that. Is that correct?
We assume that a neighbor is removing it because of they just don't want the cat to have a collar on.
How about putting a note on the collar? The new one, just putting a little note on it and say, hey, call, let's talk about this before you take the collar off, you know?
I like that idea. We could do that.
Yeah, it seems like you have a steady communication somehow with the neighbor there. Do you know which neighbor?
No, our cat lives in a neighborhood, and we call it an island that is kind of blocked off by different roads. And so he lives on this island, and everybody in the neighborhood knows him because he's out and about so much. I mean, he's a nice cat. He's a very, very nice cat.
Does a breakaway collar, is that visibly a breakaway collar, or could that look like any other collar? Could the neighbor think, oh, it's just another
no.
collar? No, it looks
no,
different.
It's definitely a breakaway. You can see that it has a snap instead of a buckle. So,
wow, Doc, this is a tough one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hal's suggestion about putting some, like, little note or, you know, important identification is included. I would also make sure you do have your kitty microchipped, and it won't mm-hmm. serve the purpose of having the audible tone, the bell sound, but at least that's another way that you can help ensure that he's your kitty and that he is identified, and heaven forbid someone picks him up and decides they want to have him, that there's some ID there. So, you know,
good.
Fabulous. Good, good. And you know, the other side of the argument would be the safest thing would be to keep him indoors so that he doesn't even have this problem. So I know that's not always a popular opinion with some cats who are used to this lifestyle of being the outdoor kind of wandering, checking out the neighborhood and keeping tabs on his domain. But that would be the only one thing I could say that we would avoid this problem altogether.
They live a longer life, don't they, Doc? Generally, isn't it statistically proven?
Definitely. Outdoor cats, injury, infectious disease, you name it, it shortens their, almost by 50% shortens their lifespan. So, yeah, that's my little advertisement to keep them indoors.
Yeah.
Well, I think I like the idea of putting a little note on his collar. We'll buy another collar and attach a little note to it and see what happens and do the attachment to the collar. Because when we adopted this cat from a neighbor who was moving out of town, her only stipulation was that we continue to keep him as an indoor-outdoor cat because that was the way she wanted him to be. And we put in the cat door so that he could come in and out. And so we're going to keep that arrangement.
Okay.
We're going to keep our part of the arrangement there.
Well,
but I do like
that
idea.
Yeah, put the note on and then let it, call us back. Let us know what happens. We're very curious. And if you're the neighbor, okay. Hey, stop it.
Yeah, put a bell on the little cat door so you can hear the bell when he comes
in. Door too.
The cat door, yes.
Hey, there you go.
That's an idea, too.
Judy actually made me wear a bell at one time because I would sneak around.
Yeah, I couldn't find him around the house.
Where I was. So I understand completely you're wanting to have that. And, of course, the birds, it does scare away the birds so that they have a chance to get away. Good idea. I hope it works out. Let me know how it does work out, okay?
Thank you very much.
Well, this portion of Animal Radio is underwritten by Kensington Books. If you love stories about finding strength through the wisdom of dogs, look no further than A Reason for Hope by award-winning author Kristen von Kreisler. It's a beautifully uplifting story about a courthouse dog named Hope, who's trained to comfort victims throughout the legal process. A Reason for Hope is now available everywhere books are sold. And if you need more information, you can visit them over at kensingtonbooks.com. Thanks, Kensington, for underwriting Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
This is Glenn Close on Animal Radio, urging you to spay or neuter your pet.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It's Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets. And we are just moments away from talking to the attorneys for Catfish the Alligator. Well, really his owner, his guardian, the attorneys for his guardian. Catfish evicted, 6 weeks ago from his home. This was a pet alligator. I've never heard of that before. Apparently, the alligator would sit next to him and watch TV next to Sean and cuddle up, and they would share chicken nuggets.
I'm having this image of a alligator sitting on the couch next to me while I'm watching, Golden Girls or something. I'm just not. I'm having a hard time on that. I don't know.
I'm with you on that.
And sharing a bowl of chicken nuggets. That's not hard to imagine.
Oh, okay. Well. There's so many things that I could have said there because, my first wife, she was a lot like an alligator and she weighed about 200 pounds too.
Oh, you're going to so get it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I retract. Can I retract that? Too late to retract that? Can we take that out of the transcript? Can you just remove that from the transcript like I never said it? It's just electrons in the air right now. It never even happened, right?
What happened?
Nothing
happened.
That's what I'm thinking. What? My ex-wife's online too?
I'm going to put her through, Hal.
So we're going to talk to the attorneys in just a few minutes right here on Animal Radio. We just put up this cool infographic over at our Facebook page. It shows all the foods that you really shouldn't be feeding your animals. And they, of course, include grapes and the chocolate and the bones. The bones are the bad things. A lot of people think, the turkey bones or the ham bones, That's good for them.
Oh my gosh. I think over the last holiday, we had 4 different animals hospitalized due to pancreatitis and or bone ingestions. One of the last ones was a dog that was fed, ribeye meat and the bone.
Oh,
and, it chewed the bone up, but it caused a lot of havoc on the insides and had to be hospitalized and, nursed along until those fragments could pass.
Is there a solution for that? I mean, is rawhide a potential substitute for bones?
You know, it really depends on the pet and what we're trying to accomplish. Rawhides also have their own inherent dangers. You know, they can get, depending on the type, small pieces can get sloppy, wet, pose a choking hazard. They too can get caught in the digestive tract if there are large enough pieces ingested. Diarrhea, you know, there's all sorts of different things that can occur with that. So it's really a matter of deciding whether or not we have to have a chew item. And, you know, doggy dentists will tell you it is not necessary for a dog to have a chew item. But what is important is to have mental stimulation and physical activity. So we want to kind of divert those directions rather than just say, here's a bone, chew on this.
Okay.
Get a Kong and fill it with peanut butter and put it in the freezer for a while and let them chew on that.
That's always a fun one. That's a good tip.
You know what surprised me from this infographic, though, was gum, chewing gum. And some candies down there in the list. Apparently, there's a sweetener substitute called xylitol.
You know, this is my huge. I wish we had better signage at the different stores about this, because xylitol, it's something we can tolerate, and it's not a problem for humans. It's used as a sugar substitute. So rather than having sugar in your candy and your gum, it's something that we can have that still gives you the flavor and also doesn't have the same risk for decay. But for dogs, it will lead to a very serious drop in their blood sugar, and it can be fatal. Sometimes just one piece of sugar-free gum can do the job and be dangerous. And there are other dogs I've treated that have survived the low blood sugar, but then gone on to go into liver failure. So it really can be very serious. So don't leave those purses on the floor, the candy and the gums down below. You'll be shocked. If you start looking and reading the back of your gum and your candies, you will be surprised to see how many different products have this. So be aware as a pet owner and avoid the use of those types of products, or keep them up away from your pets.
What about the ABC gum? The already been chewed gum. No, I have to laugh. You know, you laugh, but, you know, there's people spit it out on the sidewalk. And if I'm walking dogs and, you know, they just go and just inhale it before I can even catch them. Is that a concern? Is it as strong as like a stick of gum that hasn't been chewed yet that they get into?
You know, that's a great question. And I can't believe that there'd be that much of a residual product in there that it'd still be a danger. But, you know, I guess it depends on how much the animal would ingest and how recently it had been chewed and spit out. So I don't know. That's a great question.
So don't take your dog down bubblegum alley with all the gum stuck on the walls.
No chewing bubblegum either. Yes. Don't let them do that. Even if they can blow bubbles, don't do that.
Yes.
It's just too dangerous.
So people, don't just spit out your gum. Please discard it properly.
There you go.
Well, that's a whole nother hygiene issue that we talk about.
Well, this portion of Animal Radio is underwritten by Kensington Books. Curl Up with a 12 Days of Snowball by Kristen McKenna. It's an adorably funny novel featuring a matchmaking cat named Snowball. The 12 Days of Snowball. It's a perfect read for animal lovers or anyone looking for romance. Pick up your copy today anywhere books are sold, or visit KristenMcKenna.com. That's KristenMcKanagh.com. And thanks, Kensington, for underwriting Animal Radio.
And now an Animal Radio news brief. A stray cat named Frankie took up residence in the parking lot of a McDonald's in Franklin, New Zealand, begging for handouts from customers. He survived on fast food for about a year. And just like in Super Size Me, it took its toll. Jessica Watson, the SPCA field officer who rescued Frank, said she became worried after noticing the cat's face became swollen. His eyelids weren't closing properly and his coat started to get matted. He wasn't overweight, but McDonald's wouldn't meet the nutritional requirements for a cat. She said, when I first took him home, he refused to eat anything because it wasn't McDonald's. I seriously considered going back there to get him a burger, but luckily Frankie is now on a healthy diet and he's available for adoption. I'm Stacey Cohen. Get more animal breaking news at Animal Radio. animalradionewsbrief.com. This has been an Animal Radio News Brief. Get more at animalradio.pet.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical.
800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. That's 800-485-4409.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It's Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets. We'll go back to the phones in just a couple of seconds, but I have a question for you ladies, and I want you to answer honestly, okay?
Uh-oh. Well, you know, in my line of work, I have to kind of, you know, walk that middle line between honesty and being polite.
Okay. Nike is my cat, as you know. Do you think he's tightly wired, stressed out?
Yes, or... yes, and yes.
Really?
Yes. Oh, no doubt about it. I've never seen a cat so wired.
Because he is on Prozac.
I know.
I was going to say, are you going to disclose that? That's a very important piece of information.
Just think if he wasn't on Prozac.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's some research that says if you're a stressed out person that your animal might be stressed out too. And vice versa. If that, you're the calm, cool, collective kind of person, your animal.
Ah, that answers a lot of questions.
And we welcome back to the airwaves Dr. John Huber, clinical forensic psychologist. Hi, how are you doing, Doc?
I am great, Hal. Thanks for having me back on.
So tell us, what is this study all about?
Well, they started looking at bad behavior in animals, and they started realizing, first of all, it's kind of subjective, because what you and I might think is bad behavior may actually be from, you know, somebody from Dr. Debbie's point of view, hey, the dog just doesn't know, you know, what your expectations are. They're acting like a dog. They're not acting poorly. And as they started looking at this, you know, this was all subjective from individuals. They stumbled on this idea. How do you rate yourself? Do you rate yourself as being relatively stress-free and relaxed, or do you rate yourself as being highly stressed? And what they found out was the higher your stress level, the worse your animals behaved in your perception. And a lot of that is because, you know, dogs have better senses than we do, first of all. They can hear things farther away than we can, about four times farther than we can when it comes to low volume sounds. And they have so much wider range and pitch that they're able to pick up on things with us. They can probably, like, if you go back and think to some of the studies they've done with different horses and stuff, they can pick up on your internal functioning, you know, how your heart rate is and your respiratory. So dogs are much more sensitive to our emotions. And you add on top of that, the evidence to support this is that there are seizure dogs out there that can identify you starting a seizure 45 minutes to a half an hour before you actually have the seizure. So they're very intuitive, and they pick up on our senses and how we're feeling better than other human beings
do. Well, you know, it always seems like whenever Judy wants to take Ladybug for a WALK, that the dog knows way before even Judy knows, it seems like.
Yeah, ours is the RIDE. So we picked up a shelter dog, an abused dog, and we rescued him, or her actually, this summer. And obviously it was a male person who was doing the abuse. And the dog is finally, you know, it likes to come in and sleep on me during the night. So it's breaking through finally, and she doesn't run when I walk in the room and things like that anymore. So
yeah,
it's very difficult to pick up on how much is that the abuse, or maybe the dog's picking up on stuff that I don't know I'm transmitting.
Is there a way, you know, I look down at the dog, she's stressed. Is there a way I can make her calmer? Do I just act calmer? Would she see right through my guise?
From a psychologist standpoint, we know that our bodies react. And if we start faking like we're calm, our body will start catching on and actually over time start faking calm with you. So in essence, it will make you calmer. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but if you're stressed out and you want to start doing that, it'll probably take 6 to 8 weeks for your own body to catch on. And once that happens, the pet should come right along with you.
I know so many dogs that have this separation anxiety dealy thing. And I know dogs that, you know, couldn't care less if you left the house. Is separation anxiety something that is reflected upon what our disposition is?
Well, I know one of the psychologists in my office has two dogs that have that, and they're on, you know, okay, I'm violating HIPAA law. They're on Prozac, and it's helping those dogs in their separation anxiety. And what they found out, you know, the dogs are not destroying things in the house that they used to or driving the neighbors crazy because they're barking all the time. But the dogs were already very stressed out animals. He got his from a rescue also, and they were very anxious and shaking all the time and very afraid to go on walks. And now with the Prozac, all of that's kind of gone away. And he you know, is able to walk the dogs. They moved to a new neighborhood, and the dogs had no problem adjusting to the new parks. So I think it's a real thing. I think a lot of it is caused, just like humans, you know, we worry about 9,900 different things that will never go wrong. So that causes our anxiety. I think the dogs have had some traumatic experience in their life before us, and my experience and my partner's experience with his dogs, and they're afraid of what might happen next because they've had that unsettled or uncertain areas in their life. And that's where our stress brings in that uncertainty that scares the dogs and causes their trauma.
Yeah, I do a lot of pet sitting, and I get these ladies that are so over the top with their dogs. Their dog's a shaking little mess. They leave me 20 pages of notes. They call me 10 times a day, you know? And I mean, you know, the dog is just a mess. Is there such thing like tough love, you know, to be more firmer with them instead of picking them up at every little thing and coddling them and telling them everything that's going to be okay? I mean...
Well, it's kind of like human babies. I mean, you know, we coddle them. We don't teach them the skills they need to be resilient. And I think it's the same way with our pets. We need to give them space to be the animal they are, be the dog or the cat. But at times, you know, because not every dog likes to be petted. Not every cat likes to be petted. They will introduce you to their level of how much nurturing they need. And they'll come to you for that. And pay attention to what they're having to say. Now, if you're stressed out, you don't have time for that. So we push ourselves on them. And again, that creates more anxiety in the pets.
And, you know, I have to chime in because in my practice, I see a lot of people that think that living within our household is all that a dog needs to be a fulfilled animal. And I think that a lot of this goes back to early socialization. You know, granted, you adopt a pet, it has, you know, some pre-existing phobia. That's a different thing. But as pet owners, I think Americans can do a far better job in socializing, exposing your animals to things and not making them so dependent on us. They can sleep all day long unattended and not to be entertained. And we don't need to feel bad about leaving them if we've socialized them in the right way. So that exactly. would be the big change I think Americans really need to do.
Well, and that's where the ride comes in with our pet because, you know, it's a boxer and it needs lots of room. And we don't have lots of room where we're living, but we take him for a ride almost every single day. And we take him down to the park and it butts up against a green space where there's deer and stuff like that. And they come out to the park right before sunset. And we take the dog down there and she's more afraid of the deer than they are. But she goes out and runs with them and they chase her. I mean... And it's all yeah. out. I mean, full blown, full speed for 35, 45 minutes. And then she just comes and lays down and spreads herself out on the grass to try and cool off. And she's done.
Wow.
We are with Dr. John Huber. He is a clinical forensic psychologist and no stranger to Animal Radio.
I saw a report last week that said, and in fact, I believe Lori reported on this, that our time that we spend texting and on social media and Facebooking, our animals are picking up on this and it's driving them crazy.
Yeah. It is, absolutely. And I, you know, I've got this boxer now, and I get on the phone and she jumps up on the bed, because that's the bed and the couch now are her safe zones with me. So if I'm there, she comes out and she wants me to pay attention. And if I get a text from a patient or one of the shows I'm getting ready to be on, she puts her foot right on the phone and pulls it away from my face. And she's like, no. And then she likes the way I scratch her back and massage her hips. And if her hips are bothering her, she sticks them right in my face. And she wants the right or left side, she turns so I can see it. And I got to love my dog.
Hal's cat will actually come up and sit on his desk in front of the computer and block Hal's view of the computer.
But I'm not alone to that.
The cat puts himself between the computer and Hal's face.
Yeah, and I say this all the time.
Well, we have a 13-year-old tomcat who has had the world to herself until this summer when this dog came in. And he is figuring out how he can manipulate the dog's behavior. And the best way is to be involved with us, because before the tomcat didn't want anything to do with us. You know, he was the ruler and we were there to bow down to him.
Of course.
But now he sees the dog and it's like, hey, I'll go and I'll sit next to them and I'll try and get up in their lap during dinner. And I'll, you know, just drives the dog crazy, torments the dog.
So many questions, so little time. Dr. John Huber, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. You guys have an amazing show. Obviously, you can tell I love animals. And, you know, I spent the weekend with a bunch of cows chasing wild hogs on my friend's property. So.
Wow. That sounds like quite a weekend there.
It was a blast.
The website is mainstreammentalhealth.org, and we'll put links to everything you've heard on today's show over at our website at animalradio.pet.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
Hello, this is Jane Goodall on Animal Radio, and I'd just like everybody to realize that each day you live, you make some difference on the planet, and you can choose what kind of difference you're going to make. And hopefully every day you'll try to make the world a little bit better for people, for animals, and for the environment.
Oh, what did he say?
He said, we're all across the USA, the most listened to pet show today. Animal Radio, we're everywhere you go. Animal Radio. Animal Radio.
Hi, Karen, how are you?
I'm fine, how are you?
Very good. I've got Dr. Debbie standing right here. How can she help you?
Well, I have a 14-and-a-half-year-old. Cat. He was a feral kitten and I've raised him. He's a great pet. But I've had problems with his ears probably for the last 7 years, and it doesn't seem like we can get anything under control, and I'm not sure if he hasn't been misdiagnosed.
Okay. Well, what has he been diagnosed with so far?
Well, it started out with ear mites, and the treatments were fairly successful depending on what they were. It seemed like a shot control them better than the eardrops, but
okay.
In the last several years he's developed He's always congested. He has a thick congestion in his nose. It varies from a white, thick mucus to yellow to sometimes bloody. And the last time I had him at the vet, she thought maybe it was a malformation of his nose or a tumor. But he always has this black, crusty stuff in his ear.
And, I mean, is the vet able, I mean, this is where I like to look into the radio here. Are they able to actually see in your kitty's ear canal, or is there just a lot of gunk in there that they can't really get a good look?
There's a lot of gunk in there. And I've used, I think the last drops I got were MitaClear.
Okay.
And then there was an Octi rinse or something to clean his ear with, but it just never goes away. It's always there.
Okay. And is he an inside kitty or does he go outside?
He's both. He's a farm cat. In the wintertime, he pretty much stays in the house, and in the summertime, he's pretty much out all the time.
Okay. All right. Well, here's what I would typically do, Karen. When we have, especially a chronic ear infection, there's a couple things I would do. Is I would want to make sure we take some nice samples of what that garbage looks like inside the ear and do some things with it. So I put that on slides. I might even culture it. But I definitely want to know more about what we've got. And if I find mites, great. Then we'll treat that way. But I wouldn't stop looking, because a lot of times we can find bacterial infections along with that, or fungal infections. And I want to make sure we get the right medication around there. Now, if we've got a lot of garbage in the ear, one of the main things we may need to do is to get that out of the ear. And that's really hard to do with just squeezing a liquid down the ears and asking you to clean them at home. So only thing is, age concerns aside, with anesthesia, I would talk about doing a anesthetic flush to get the garbage out and to allow us to look inside that ear canal. Because there's a lot of things that might be playing a role deeper down in the ear that we really need to get to the root of. And that's how I would try to manage some of those chronic aspects to an ear infection. Now, you mentioned some other stuff about the congestion and some of this discharge stuff. In some cases, with chronic infections in cats in the ears, we can actually run into a development of a type of a polyp that grows. It may be, you know, a primary problem. The growth is the underlying issue. But in some cases, it's actually a benign growth that can occur deep inside the ear canal. And in some cases, it actually can come from the ear canal and actually go into the back of the throat or down into the back of the mouth. So some of the concerns of a growth back there might not be all that far gone. And that might take some actual anesthetic procedures to actually look at that and to try to evaluate that a bit further. But that could be something that might be playing a role to cause both that congestion type sign and the ear infection. And you know, I guess the other thing is we do have an older kitty here, so we have to keep our eyes open for bad teeth as well as, you know, tumor potentials, you know, kind of all the way across the board. But but I think that I would get a little bit more aggressive as far as getting those samples, getting the ears cleaned, and then seeing if we might have something like a polyp in there.
Okay. And what is a fungus in the ear?
A fungus. I know, doesn't that sound scary? A fungus, basically, it would be like yeast. The technical word is Malassezia. And yeast is just as common as bacteria in dogs and cats' ears and on their skin. And it's an opportunist that takes advantage of that real warm, moist environment in that dark ear canal. So, yeah, not so much like fungus-like things that, you know, might be growing on your bread in the refrigerator, but a little different class. But actually very common in skin disease in animals.
Okay. Well, I really think he's kind of lost his hearing in that ear.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know how aggressive to be with his age.
Yeah, and that's always something to balance, age versus, you know, the condition present. And I think only you and your veterinarian can really decide that. But, you know, those are just some thoughts as far as, you know, how we might try and what things to look at to see if we can get ahead of this problem and try to tackle it. Because, you know, living with a chronic ear infection ain't fun for anybody. So, well, thank you so much for your call, Karen. We appreciate you listening in and hope that's of some help for you and your kitty.
Well, you lucky dog, don't forget you can get your fix of Animal Radio anytime you want with the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android. Download it now.
It's made possible by Fear-Free Happy Homes, helping your pets live their happiest, healthiest, fullest lives at home, at the vet, and everywhere in between. Visit them at fearfreehappyhomes.com. And thanks, Fear-Free, for underwriting Animal Radio.
Award-winning author Kristen von Kreisler is known for her novels about dogs and how they bring out the best in humans. Her newest, A Reason for Hope, is an uplifting story of resilience, redemption, and a special yellow lab named Hope, a courthouse dog who's trained to comfort victims and witnesses. When a woman's life is upended by trauma, Hope gives her the courage to seek justice. A Reason for Hope by Kristen von Kreisler is available everywhere books are sold. For more info, visit KensingtonBooks.com.
Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
Well, if you just tuned in, you've missed half the show. And we had a killer last hour. This hour promises to be even better. It only gets better and better. By the way, for those of you that did just miss the last hour, you can go to animalradio.pet and hear it again. This hour, we're going to talk to the attorneys representing Sean Casey. You may remember Sean Casey is the owner guardian of that 200-pound alligator that was evicted from his house 3 weeks ago, maybe 6 weeks ago now, in Kansas City, Missouri. We tried to get him. He's a hard fellow to get. But his attorneys will be speaking to us candidly up next. Speaking of laws, I often look to the UK and Europe when I think about what kind of laws would be real effective here for our animals.
They're so much more advanced in their pet laws.
They really are. In the UK, they have what's called the Animal Welfare Act.
What's that?
And that basically says owners need to take responsible steps to ensure that all the pet's needs are met.
Don't they do that in Switzerland, too?
They may. I don't believe they do that here.
No, they don't.
They should. One of the big problems now is about what kind of diets to feed a cat. Apparently, one in six pet food suppliers are now supplying vegan diets.
And for cats?
Well, for animals, for pets.
Okay.
And they're trying to introduce them for cats, but now they're saying this is illegal. And if you are feeding your animals a vegan diet.
Your cat.
Yeah, if you're feeding your cat a vegan diet, they could become malnourished. And that means you could eventually face a hefty fine or even a jail sentence.
Wow.
Think about that. What is the deal there, Dr. Debbie?
Okay. So personal choices aside, people can choose to eat whatever diet style they want. And dogs and cats, we have different conversations. Dogs are omnivores, so they can eat both plant matter and protein or meat. Cats are obligate carnivores. So that means they have to eat meat. And without the presence of meat in their diets, they will suffer serious nutritional deficiencies. And this is because cats require about 2 to 3 times the amount of protein than a dog. And it's what they're getting in that protein that's so important. So they need amino acids like taurine, which are vital for the nervous system, for the heart, for eyes. So without taurine in their diet, they can develop heart disease, they can go blind, and they can develop neurologic problems. So it is essential for their health and welfare. So that's why many people would say that those who are very strong vegetarians or vegans, cats are really not the pet for you because morally you will struggle with that decision because they need that meat-based protein in their diet.
What do you think about what they're doing in the UK as far as fining and jail sentences for owners that don't feed the proper diet to their cats?
You know, I think that would honestly be very difficult to enforce. And, you know, maybe that's a scare tactic, but I think education's really the big thing. Is there are certain populations that this is, you know, core in their own diet strategies. And once we educate people that, you know, cats can't eat this way. And if they do, it requires a lot of nutritional adjustment and management and veterinary nutritionists to help balance diets, without the benefit of meat in their food. So, it's really not recommended to try to make your cat a vegetarian. And obviously there it could cause you jail time.
What about dogs? Can they have a vegan diet?
Potentially, yeah. They still have need for certain amino acids, but it's they have other ways that we can add that to their diet through other types of proteins, and they don't have this strict, super high requirement that cats have. So that's why it's so hard. It's not that we can just take a dog diet and feed it to a cat and we'll be okay, because even if you did that, you could still have these deficiencies. Cats are just so unique in the way that they have this protein requirement that that's why you don't feed dog foods to cats.
It's interesting to see that one in six food suppliers now offering a vegan diet. But not surprising, this fact just came in this week. In the United States, we have spent collectively $77 billion, with a B, $77 billion on our animals.
Just in 1 year?
Just in 1 year.
Yeah.
And that, by the way, that's over the estimates. The estimates are about 70. So, and it keeps going up. When we first started this show, it was about 50 billion or so. We are, like nobody's business, spending our money on our animals like they are family, because they are family. And so what are the things that we're spending it on? Well, food tops out that list. Food is the biggest expenditure on this $77 billion, wow, followed by veterinary care. Have you seen an uptick in the last 10 years?
Well, I think the level of care and then the types of services that are available are so different now. Just, you know, a lot of the surgical and medical care we can provide can actually mirror that, which you can get at your own physician's office. So with that, yeah, prices, you know, certainly go up. But I do find it interesting that food, you know, we always seem to think that, you know, you show love to your animal with food. So I can see that this would be a trend that is the number one cost expenditure, because most people, when there's a problem with their pet, they don't say, what's my veterinarian say I need to do? They say, what should I feed my pet to make it gain more weight, or to stop it from scratching, or to correct its litter box problems? Yeah. That's always kind of the inherent first question people ask. And maybe we should be going to the veterinarian first.
We're feeding Nike a special, very expensive prescription kidney food for his kidneys, because he's having renal failure. And it costs a lot of money for that stuff, but I'm not going to feed him anything else. So yeah. I sort of bite the bullet there. Are you spending money on your animals this year? Of course, if you're listening, you're probably spending money on your animals, right?
Oh, I would assume, yeah, most Americans, you know, this is how we show our love, and buying them things that they need. And, you know, for my pets, yes, they're completely spoiled. They are now getting a selection of new dog beds that are set for the new areas in the home that they've since decided are kind of where they want to spend their time when we're sleeping or watching TV. So rather than make them go to other areas, I'm now buying them the appropriate sized and shaped beds for those locations.
Good for you.
Yeah, I want them to be near us, so I want them to be comfortable. So that's my big expenditure this year, will be the new bedwear.
So there you go. That's the new research. Hey, do you want to talk to us? We want to talk to you. Hey, Greg, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm very well. How are you today?
Very good.
Greg, I heard some yapping, and I thought your voice changed there.
Yeah, that's my little trucking buddy here. He's a little over 3 years old, been in the truck with me ever since he was pocket size.
Wow.
He's not much bigger than that now.
What kind of dog?
I have a little, the breeder told me it's called a tiny toy Chihuahua. He's kind of between a teacup and a toy.
Okay.
And he's solid red and black brindle, and was born tailless, actually. His mother was tailless.
Interesting. Oh, so he's got a little something. I love tailless pets. I've had several of them. So.
Aren't most of your pets at home tailless?
I've had a cat that had a tail. Well, it's artificially, you know, had to amputate one of the cat's tails, one of the dog's tails. You know, they just kind of keep, we chop body parts off our pets all the time. But what
not
can
really.
I do for you? Well, I'm not going to chop your pet's body parts off, but what can I do for you here today?
Well, my question, my little friend here has a girlfriend at home that's about 14 and a half months old.
Okay.
And she just recently came through her second cycle. And I don't know whether they were active really or not, never caught them at anything, but we didn't really try to separate them. She's also a Chihuahua. And I'm hoping that she's not too young, you know, that wouldn't have been a problem if she does turn out pregnant. But how would we know? When would we start seeing any symptoms or any signs or anything?
Okay. First question, is she too young? No. Generally, we do prefer a dog to be bred on their second cycle. We just hate for them to get pregnant around that six-month mark. It's kind of like a teenage pregnancy. So you're okay there. Now, as far as pregnancy-wise, duration, dogs are pregnant for about 63, 64 days. You know, significant physical changes you may not know for a full month or so. And the trick is that dogs can also have false pregnancies, so that can also look like they're pregnant and even produce milk. So some of these physical changes, they're not foolproof, but, you know, we would be watching for weight gain. An increased appetite usually kicks in about a month into a pregnancy. And then it's a couple weeks later that we actually will start to see things like milk production. But some of the behaviors like nesting, where a dog will kind of build little beds or, you know, try to find a little comfy spot to sleep for the pups, that can also happen with a false pregnancy. So sometimes we have been fooled, both veterinarians and people alike that have pets. So one of the things I might suggest is to actually have your baby taken to the veterinarian about 3 to 4 weeks after possible breeding time. And they can do an ultrasound and look to see, did diagnose pregnancy. And that'll help kind of put a timeline on things as well, because we can age the pups based on the size of the puppy's skull. And that will help you in preparing for, you know, when we might be having some babies delivered.
Okay.
We can always do x-rays as well when we get a little further along the lines, about 45 days after breeding. But by that point, things are, if you're asking, are we pregnant or not, usually it's a little bit more apparent by that point because you're a little further into it.
Okay. My other question, I guess, that in parallel to that is I think she has not yet had her one-year shots, kind of chastise my wife on that. She's let that slide. And would that be something that you would want to wait till we know for sure whether she's pregnant?
Absolutely.
Don't
vaccinate a dog that we suspect could be pregnant. There can be some problems with that. So, but yeah, shame. We always want to make sure our pregnant babies are caught up to date with their shots beforehand, because that means the babies will have a little better chance at immunity to many diseases. So, hope all goes well.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your call, Greg.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hi, this is Michelle Stafford from The Young and the Restless on Radio... Radio Animal?
Animal Radio.
Oh, my God.
Unless you're dyslexic.
So, I'll do it one more time. Hi, this is Michelle Stafford from The Young and Restless on Animal Radio. And remember, bay and neuter your pets.
We're in for a treat with The 12 Days of Snowball by Kristen McKenna, a heartwarming novel partly told from the perspective of a mischievous feline named Snowball. Snowball considers herself the official matchmaker for any lonely humans in her life, and it's a job she takes very seriously. The 12 Days of Snowball by Kristen McKenna is available everywhere books are sold. For more info, visit KristenMcKenna.com. That's KristenMcKenna.com.
Hello, this is Jane Goodall on Animal Radio. And I'd just like everybody to realize that each day you live, you make some difference on the planet. And you can choose what kind of difference you're going to make. And hopefully every day you'll try to make the world a little bit better for people, for animals, and for the environment.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Did you guys see another PetSmart grooming incident happen with the jaw now?
Oh, no. What happened? Jaw.
Well, I don't believe all...
Tell me what happened first.
Apparently, they said that the dog... had a broken jaw due to a grooming-related accident, but nobody really knows, and there's a lot of speculation. But that's why we need regulation in the industry, because it'll eliminate, you know, fact and fiction.
As the veterinary professional, granted it was only one, like, picture I saw, but it looked to me like it was a little poodle that had a rotten mouth. And when you have untreated dental disease, it actually creates weak bones, and you'll get osteomyelitis, or even, you know, sometimes pulling teeth from rotten mouths. They'll break the, you know, the jaw can break. So I kind of questioned the background medical history before I would ever put a judgment out and say, you know, if he had rotten teeth and that was another contributing factor, you know, before I would, you know, ruin someone's career, I'd want to know that.
Here's the problem I have with that. Those questions needed to be asked. And you know, because, again, if a pet's coming in and I'm the groomer, I'm going to look at this. I'm going to check the teeth because it is something that I've had problems with in the past. And I'm going to look at it and I'm going to give them and say, listen, we have a problem here. And, you know, X, Y, and Z could happen. Your pet's not going to let me touch their face because due to discomfort, I can't groom it until you get veterinary attention. So that's the only problem that I do have when the general public isn't explained. Sometimes they are, and they ignore it. But there's times where, as a professional, I think you got to be a little bit more proactive and deny extreme cases like that just because of this type of situation.
Mm-hmm. True.
Okay, let's take one for, this is for Joey? Okay, for one for groomer Joey Volani, we have Kitty on the phone. Hey, Kitty, welcome to the show.
Hello.
What's going on?
Well, I have a cat that is too fat. She doesn't groom herself. I was wondering if I could get her shaved instead of, you know, messing with the hairballs and having her brushed out, because I have to take her to the vet and they have to sedate her and then brush her out because she won't let me do it.
So she doesn't, she's not happy being groomed either, is that correct?
No. And she bites if I try to do it.
She bites you if you try to do it. Okay, so that's something. Believe me, a nasty cat is a lot more dangerous than a nasty dog. They have a lot of types of bacteria in their mouth, and when they bite you, sometimes it could be pretty nasty. Is it a long or a short-haired cat, first of all?
She's long-haired.
Okay. And have you ever had a groomer work on the cat?
No.
Okay, what I would try, not that I'm trying to take anything out of the veterinarian's hands, but sometimes in a grooming salon, a professional groomer, because they do it all the time, may have a lot more success removing the knots and tangles. Now, depending upon how serious they are, would really determine, you know, if they can remove them or not. A lot of times the cat, though, even though it seems like this hopeless, if you take your time and you have two people work on the cat where they take their time and the cat's not stressed out, a lot of times you could work it out. Now, can you clip the cat down? You absolutely can. But my question to you is, did you ever do that before to this particular cat?
No.
Sometimes what happens is when you clip cats down short, because there really isn't, you don't have much of a variation. You either have to go real short or you got to leave it full coated. And that's only because of safety reasons. The blade that you have to use on the cat cuts to 1/8 of an inch off of the skin. So basically it's bald. What happens is a lot of times the cats know that there is a change. They don't know exactly what it is. And sometimes we'll go into a state of depression where they'll hide or, just not want to see anyone because they're embarrassed of you know, what has become of them. Even though they don't know exactly what it is, they just know it's a change. If you do have to do that, the most important thing is you don't want to laugh at the cat. You don't want to change anything, because believe me, they know. They know if they're being laughed at. They know if it's a different situation. So if it has to be clipped down, I would use it as the last resort. But I would try your professional groomer first for a couple of reasons. I wouldn't want to sedate a cat unless I really, really had to, only because it's not real, you know, it's not real good on this system. And the groomer will tell you within the first 10 minutes of the grooming, either call you up and say, well, listen, please come pick up your cat. We can't do it. And then in that situation, you'll have to go to your veterinarian and do what's ever necessary at that time. But if you get a good cat groomer, a lot of times they'll put two people on the cat. One holds the cat where the cat can't bite or scratch the other one. And after a while, if you take your time, sometimes they calm down a little bit, especially if it's in an environment where there's no dogs barking and it's a little bit quiet. and they'll calm down and sometimes like the professional grooming. And the good thing about that is it also may make the cat like to be brushed at home and, break that whole cycle.
Okay, well, I'll try that.
Okay, unfortunately, I wish I had a miracle spray that I could tell you about, but there's not. It's just brushing and combing. And, I would try that first, and hopefully they can help you out there.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Kitty.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hey, folks, this is Jackson Galaxy. You're listening to Animal Radio. Please do everyone a favor, spay or neuter your animals today.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. That's 800-485-4409.
Hi, this is Paul Reiser, and you're listening to Animal Radio. Every minute you're here, you're not harming someone else. I don't know what that means. If it's usable, use it. Otherwise, cut it and get out.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It's Animal Radio. This is where we celebrate the connection with our pets, and your pets could be dogs, cats, flamingos, ferrets, what else? Birds, horses.
Pigs. Mm-hmm.
Alligators, of course.
Alligators.
Certain. I don't see many alligators in my office.
We reported, I guess, 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago about this alligator and his owner, Sean Casey, were evicted from their house, and the alligator, I believe, was removed from his... I don't know where the alligator is now. We're going to find out in just a second, because he has retained the services of jungle law attorney Lauren Sierra and Tristan Woods. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing? Thanks for having us on. We really appreciate it.
So your practice revolves around exotic pets. Is that correct?
Yeah, we do a lot of... We do a lot of pro bono work for the animal community in Kansas City, and we focus a lot on exotic animals. You really wouldn't think there's many exotic animals in Kansas City in the middle of the Midwest, but you'd be surprised how many calls we get regarding instances like this.
But isn't that against the law? Aren't you helping them break the law?
Well, we're not actually helping them break the law, because actually outside of Kansas City, you're allowed to have certain exotic animals. So for an example, with catfish here, Mr. Casey, if he would relocate about 20 miles outside of Kansas City, he could have catfish back and live happily ever after with him.
We'll talk about catfish in just a couple of seconds here. Would it be safe to say that this alligator, though, is the first alligator that you've represented in Kansas City? Or at all?
Is it? Actually, no, I think it might be our second alligator.
Yeah, it's our third, fourth alligator, but the prior one had three of them that we worked out a deal with. But, yeah, this will be our second. So go ahead, Lauren. Why don't you tell them a little bit about
Yeah,
that.
I think it's funny because of who we are and because we're named Jungle Law, I think that animal owners, not just in Kansas City, but pretty much anywhere, when they hear about us, they automatically think that we're the law firm that fits with what they have, and they reach out to us. And obviously, what we care about the most is the animals are going to end up in the best situation possible. Sometimes that isn't always what the client necessarily wants, so it can be a tough challenge. But in the case of catfish, catfish's owner was actually a really wonderful owner, not abusive or anything like that. He was very caring, and so we were fortunate that this had a happy ending.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about catfish, who is obviously an alligator. How much does catfish weigh right now?
About 225.
Holy moly.
Oh, he's not a small, yeah, it's full grown, almost 8 feet long. He's a serious animal.
And he's had a diet of chicken nuggets, chicken McNuggets, I believe, or something like that.
He's very picky, actually, because he only likes chicken McNuggets from Wendy's, not McDonald's. Oh. Everyone wants that to be known.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah, I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah, he used to take catfish to the drive-thru, and they all knew him in there at the Wendy's drive-thru.
Wow, I bet. So Sean Casey, the owner, or guardian, should I say, has had catfish since, well, I guess he was 14 inches when he first got him?
Yeah, that's true. He's had him. He's raised him ever since. He was about the size of a ruler, actually. Yep, about that. And, you know, he didn't know that, you know, it would grow into this kind of love affair and attachment, and that's kind of how it grew. So he became part of the family.
Did he fear at all for his family?
Never did. He kept catfish with him. He used to take him out on walks. He used to basically sleep right next to him. He made a nice, like, almost like a hot tub setting, but it was a nice little lagoon in his front living room for catfish. So he'd set, watch TV, and catfish would be right at his feet.
Wow.
So, it's strange. I know it. It's pretty remarkable. But these animals, you know, the owners train them to learn to trust them, and, you know, we've seen this before.
But, you know, they're still a wild animal. I don't know if I could give you full 100% trust.
I totally agree with you. I don't think I could either, but we're around these animals so much, we still are very weary about it. But, you know, keep our fingers crossed. Nothing's happened yet to us, and we're around them a lot.
Where is catfish now?
Catfish is currently, well, he's actually at a rescue group that we work with a lot in the Kansas City area. And he... you know, I think that the best place for him is at Monkey Island at the moment. I know that Sean really, you know, loves spending time with him and probably eventually wants to have him back. But the most important thing with an animal like this is that they can have the continued care and a place where they can be financially supported.
So yeah, when he's currently being held at Monkey Island. It's in Greenwood, Missouri.
So in your personal opinion, should Sean Casey take catfish back? Is that a good situation for catfish to go back to Sean Casey if he moved outside the city limits?
I think that, you know, there's two things at work here that need to be in play. First of all, obviously he needs to be following the law. And then the next important thing is making sure that he has the wherewithal to take care of catfish. He certainly, Sean Casey, has the heart to take care of catfish. He's a great animal parent. And a lot of times people who get these animals are irresponsible and don't really care. But one of the great things about catfish, as we already talked about, is he was very plump because he was well-fed and taken care of. But the good news is at Monkey Island, Dana Severelli, who's over there, is a great person who has the wherewithal to be able to take care of him as well. So it's just important, I think, that, again, that the laws are being followed and that he's in the best hands possible. And then, you know, if whoever can provide that outcome is probably the best place for him to be.
So is there any ongoing litigation? Are you you're representing him now. Where does that stand and what does that mean for catfish?
Well, I represent catfish in he received a citation for having an exotic animal within the city limits.
Okay.
So I'm working with the prosecutor in Kansas City to see what I can do regarding Mr. Casey in that instance. But there's no civil litigation or anything like that regarding anything. He has signed the rights over to Dana Severelli.
Oh, he
right
did?
Now. He did. Yes, he did.
Oh, wow.
So he had to do that. Why? Because Animal Control was willing to give catfish back, but, you know, Mr. Casey has to have a suitable home for him. Or he's just going to go, if, you know, say he got him back and he was found, you know, inside the city limits, you know, next time Mr. Severelli might not be able to have the advantage of being able to take him back again. Does that make sense? Like, you don't know what would have happened to catfish if he gets him back and then can't provide him the support and, you know, the home that he needs. So we kind of wanted to make sure that was taken care of.
So right now, is Sean Casey homeless?
I don't believe he's homeless. No, but I don't think he can. He's still in the city limits, so he cannot have, you know, he doesn't have the support right now to hold catfish. And we don't want him to, you know, take on that burden of having to try to find another place outside of the city right now. So that's kind of why Dana's having him right now in Monkey Island. It's kind of a touchy situation. I understand most people think, oh, it's just a reptile, you know, he'll get over it. But, you know, as Lauren alluded to, he's in love with this alligator.
Sure.
You know, he took care of him, the alligator, better than himself, he told us multiple times.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubt.
How old is catfish now?
What did he say, Lauren? Do you know the age?
Catfish is pretty old. I just don't remember the exact age. I was surprised at how long alligators actually live. It's a commitment, a time commitment to have something like that.
Oh, he could live another 30, 40 years, I think. I think
wow.
That's a really long time. Yeah. I want to say he's probably over, 10 years old or so to get that big 7 to 10, possibly.
Yeah. I understand that they also found, when they cleared the house out, they also found 3 pythons and a rabbit.
Yeah, that's true. Mr. Casey was, I know how much he loved the alligator, but he said that his rabbit was the most beloved animal that he had.
Really?
He named it Dinner, believe it or not.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I know it. You would think, oh, boy, what's this about? And then I started talking to him, and he said, you know, when I was his brother-in-law or somebody, it was a rainy day in the summer, and there was this baby rabbit outside on his driveway, and he didn't think he could, you know, take care of itself, and he took it in and raised it. And so that's why animal control actually let the rabbit go, which is kind of unfortunate outside because it was a wild animal. So who knows? You know, that's weird. I know it's weird. Like,
that's why there's nice to have these rescue groups around, too, because sometimes when animal control finds these animals, they have to do the quickest solution possible. But when there are rescue groups available, like alligators or potentially rabbits can go to right away, it provides them a safe haven instead of being put down or something along those lines.
Mm, okay. Well, I thank you for what you're doing, and I thank you for spending time with us today. Jungle Law attorneys Lauren Sierra and Tristan Woods joining us. The website, junglelaw.com. And, of course, we'll put links to everything you've heard on today's show over at animalradio.pet. Thanks, folks.
Thanks, pal.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And, Lauren, you want to tell them about our animal abuse law bill?
Oh, yeah. We have drafted an animal abuse law for the state of Missouri at animalabuselaw.com. It's being supported by representatives from both sides of the aisle politically, and the goal is to raise misdemeanors on animal abuse to felonies and to create an animal abuser registry list. So please visit animalabuselaw.com. Anybody from any state can sign the bill, and we can just help get abusers put to justice.
Okay, because we're actually taking that to Jeff City next week. It goes on the floor. So hopefully we'll get that passed.
Keep us posted on how that goes there, will you?
Yeah, we will for sure. We appreciate you allowing us to come on and talk.
And we'll put those links over at animalradio.pet.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hi, this is Paul Rogers.
And Cynthia Rogers.
On Animal Radio.
Just know that it's going to be all right, meow.
All of us here at Fido Friendly Magazine can't wait to get on the road again with our favorite Fido. We know that it's just not a vacation without our furry companions by our side. Start daydreaming now and visit FidoFriendly.com to scout out places near and far so you will be ready for your next adventure once it's safe to travel. That's FidoFriendly.com. Until then, stay safe and leave no dog behind.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
And we have one for Dr. Debbie right now. We have Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What's going on with your animal?
Well, we have a rat terrier. We've had him since he was 4 weeks old, and he's about 8 years old now. And he was a couple of years old, and he had, the best I could describe, as a grandma seizure.
Okay.
I just scared the snot out of us. And since that time, he has these occasionally, but I would say maybe like 3 a year, and we can't put our finger on any particular something that sets him off. 2 instances that come to mind where it might have been a contributing factor. He got against an electric fence, and shortly after that he had a seizure. And
holy cow, that would make me seize, I think. He actually got electrocuted by the fence?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Electric fence. And then one time here a while back, we fed him some meat scraps, which was, it was beef and a lot of fat. And shortly after that, he had a seizure. I don't know if they're connected or not, but now you'll also have on occasion what I would call a very, very mild seizure. He doesn't actually act like a grand mal seizure, but it's like all of a sudden he'll get a blank look on his face, like he doesn't know where he's at or what's going on, and like he doesn't know who we are.
And how long has he been doing this?
I'd say about 6 years.
Okay. All righty. Now, so let me ask, what has your vet done anything? Have you brought this to the attention of your veterinarian?
No, we actually have not.
Okay. Because that was going to be my first thought, is that there's different forms of seizure activity. And the first thing that we'd want to do is to try to figure out some basics of what might be triggering it. And if there's something medically that's easily discernible, that we can figure this out. Now, if it's been going on for a long time, then, you know, we need to do a little bit of backtracking. Certainly things environmental we look at, but, you know, if this has been going on for 6 years, you know, it'd be hard to say it was, you know, the electric fence or, you know, something that he got into on one particular time. But for any of my patients that have any form of seizures, you know, blood work is really one of the starting points that I would look at. And different things that we can do, but I would certainly, you know, have some of the basics done. And the question is that, you know, you're describing some of what we'd call a grand mal seizure, and then something that might be more in the category of a petit mal seizure. The difference is grand mal seizure is kind of what we all know as the classic epileptic seizure. You know, if someone falls over, right, you see them out and about, and they're kicking, they're you know, foaming at the mouth, that kind of stuff. That is a grand mal seizure. A petit mal seizure can really look like a lot of different things, and staring off into a corner, looking glazed in the eyes, can certainly look like that. And some dogs will even have focal seizures, where just like one part of the body will twitch or have a weird movement. And that can be all classified as seizure activity. So the things I would definitely see about getting this baby checked out would be to get some basic blood work. And the reason is we'd want to check things like the liver. We'd want to check his blood sugar. And, you know, certainly those are things that we can intervene and treat if there's something going on. If not, you know, there's a point where seizures of any cause can really affect the pet's quality of life and also their safety, depending on what your house or your yard environment is like. You know, if a pet were to have a seizure and you live on a rocky slope, that's a life-threatening emergency, even if it only happens 3 times a year. So we do kind of take the individual and the household into consideration. But for me, I would definitely get some basic tests going and, you know, talk about, you know, is he a pet that we need to see about getting on seizure medication? Perhaps. There's good and bad with that, but there are a lot of options out there. And it certainly sounds to me like he's set a pattern that we need to, you know, help him out and help make sure that he's, you know, a happy fella and that his days are good. Because usually dogs don't really understand what's going on when they're having these kind of spells. So if he looks at you kind of funny, you know, be careful. You know, it is a time when people can get bitten by their beloved pet because they really don't know where things are at those times. So I would say, yeah, Jerry, you know, get this little baby taken to the vet and get some things checked out for him.
Well, one thing that I did discover just recently, he was having one of those, you know, looking at me kind of glazed, like where I'm at and who are you type situations. And he loves to be brushed. And I grabbed the brush and started brushing him, and he immediately, you know, came out of it. Oh, yeah, I remember this. Oh, I know who you are.
Well, that's good. That means that, you know, his threshold is hopefully very low so that, you know, there may be some times like that where you can intervene, and that's good. But still, I wouldn't want you to dismiss it without knowing really what else we could be doing for this guy. And some dogs, it's something as simple as giving them something at bedtime to kind of help them sleep through the night and to not have episodes. And other pets, it's more a long-term continual therapy that we have to go with. But yeah, Jerry, I got to say, I I'm going to be an advocate for your baby here, and I think this is something he can't speak up, and, you know, certainly he doesn't enjoy these episodes, you know, and there's a lot that we can do as the veterinarian side of things. So I'm going to push you towards that car door, and I'm going to encourage you to put your dog in that and drive over to the vet, because we can certainly help him.
Thanks for your call, Jerry. Okay, it's time for us to get on out of here. Before we go, if you have a Yorkshire Terrier, a Shih Tzu, a Pug, or a Mini Schnauzer, please check out Dr. Debbie's books, How to Be Your Dog's Best Friends. They are awesome reads. They're over at Amazon. They're Kindle books, so you can read them on any tablet or reader. In fact, we have links at animalradio.pet, as we do for everything you've heard on today's show. Have yourself a great week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Animal Radio Network.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.